Good morning. Well, let's see. We've got a few folks missing today. I guess this time of year, got a few traveling here and there, but glad to see all present today. And I know we'll get an update on some of those people during prayer time. If anything, we're traveling, we'll certainly be praying them safe passage to and from their destinations. Well, you may have heard, not that much going on here lately with me. There she is. Victoria Rose Kale is her last. There's her last name. Born October 24th, 6 pounds, 3.6 ounces, but 19 inches long. Okay, this was a baby that came about a month early, and still 19 inches. Now I think she's up to 20 now. In the meantime, so her dad's about my height, and of course my daughter, as you know, is tall. And so she's liable to be a giant. So I'm gonna start working with her on her basketball moves just as soon as I think college scholarship. Think college scholarship for your parents' sake. So maybe she'll be playing the low post or the center position or one of the whichever. Hey, there you go. Volleyball. Hey, volleyball. I played volleyball myself. That's that. Yeah, whatever will help with those. Whatever has the word scholarship in it, that's a good one, right? That's great. Interestingly, and I won't spend a lot of time on this. John has rightly mentioned there's a time limit on this. Taking sermon time here. She was born on her father's birthday. So it was really sweet. But I kind of took him aside and I said, "Now, son, you understand. You don't have a birthday anymore. Your birthday is history." You know, you might want to just go ahead and say, okay, 23rd, 25th, just go ahead and pick one, but it ain't happening on the 24th. That's hers now. She has officially laid claim to it. He just kind of shook his head up and said, yep, I get it. So, but lots, just, yeah, 6 pounds, 3.6 ounces of just pure joy. And I'm really enjoying it. So those of you that have done this grandfather, grandparent thing for a while, if you've got words of wisdom for me, I'm open to them. the thing I hear the most is spoil them rotten and then send them home. Is that it? Okay, that's it, right. Beg pardon?
Love them a lot.
Love them a lot. There you go. I have a feeling that won't be a problem with her. You're right. You can't beat that. Right now, they're living with us to get a little bit of help. We remember what it was like those first few weeks, especially bringing home that first newborn. So lots of help from the grandmom right now. Some from me when I get in from work. So I'm just doing my best to live in the moment and enjoy that with them. So just appreciate your prayers and your well wishes and all those kinds of things. You guys in the last 10 years, which we celebrated last time, you've seen me transition through a lot of chapters in my life in this 10 years. As I think back on it, it's amazing. You know, with high school graduations and college graduations and marriages and now grandchildren. So that's a lot to squeeze into to 10 years. So I appreciate the fact that you've walked with me through that and that you continue to walk with me through that time. We got two more months left, actually less than that, to be in our faithful 14 in the year 2014. Exodus 14:14, "The Lord will fight for you. You need only be still." So in these big ups and downs and every place in between, we're called to trust God, to reflect His image, indeed His glory, into our culture. And we want to talk about that some today. All my life I've heard about the glory of God and God's glory, and you know, we even have expressions, you know, "glory be," and we sing songs about glory and these kinds of things. So we're going to hopefully get a chance to look at that a little bit today. But I'm also aware that, as you might have noticed in the title slide earlier, you know, the Lord gives and the Lord takes away. So we're at different places there today. You know, sometimes we're in that place where the Lord gives, and then we're in those other places, you know, where the Lord has taken away. And, you know, we've lost people in the last few weeks and months and years. Sharon, you know, obviously comes to mind most recently here. So, you know, in the midst of that, the scripture says, you know, the Lord gives, the Lord takes away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. Well, it's easy for me to be saying, blessed be the name of the Lord with the birth of a grandchild. Not so much when we're in those lower places where it's those situations where the Lord is taking away. So I want to share a passage with you today. It's a rather lengthy passage. We're going to read through it and then just try to glean some things from it today that will hopefully be of encouragement to us in all of this, because some of these things are not real easy to deal with. So let's look at it. Y'all are familiar with it, most of you, I'm sure, the story of the raising of Lazarus. So in the Message version, if you don't mind, we're just going to read through that. A man was sick, Lazarus of Bethany, the town of Mary and her sister Martha. This was the same Mary who massaged the Lord's feet with aromatic oils and then wiped them with her hair. It was her brother Lazarus who was sick. So the sister sent word to Jesus, "Master, the one you love so very much is sick." When Jesus got the message, he said, "This sickness is not fatal. It will become an occasion to show God's glory." There's the glory thing there. "It will be an occasion to show God's glory by glorifying God's Son." Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus, but oddly, when he heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed on where he was for two more days. After the 2 days, he said to his disciples, "Let's go back to Judea." They said, "Rabbi, you can't do that. The Jews are out to kill you, and you're going back?" And Jesus replied, "Are there not 12 hours of daylight? Anyone who walks in daylight doesn't stumble because there's plenty of light from the sun. Walking at night, he might very well stumble because he can't see where he's going." He said these things and then announced, "Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep. I'm going to wake him up." So the plot thickens. The disciples said, "Master, if he's gone to sleep, he'll get a good rest and wake up feeling fine." But Jesus was talking about death, while his disciples thought he was talking about taking a nap. Then Jesus became explicit. "Lazarus died, and I'm glad for your sakes that I wasn't there, because you're about to be given new grounds for believing. Now, let's go to him." After saying this, skip forward. Sorry, I'm a little quick on the trigger here today. There we go. "That's when Thomas, the one called the twin, said to his companions, 'Come along, we might as well die with him.' And when Jesus finally got there, he found Lazarus already dead 4 days. Bethany was near Jerusalem, only a couple of miles away, and many of the Jews were visiting Mary and Martha, sympathizing with them over their brother. Martha heard Jesus was coming and went out to meet him. Martha remained in the house. Martha said, 'Master, if you had been here, my brother wouldn't have died. Even now, I know that whatever you ask, God will give to you.'" Woo. "Jesus said, 'Your brother will be raised up.' Martha replied, 'I know that he'll be raised up in the resurrection at the end of time. You don't have to wait until the end. I am right now resurrection and life. The one who believes in me, even though he or she dies, will live. And everyone who lives believing in me does not ultimately die at all. Do you believe this?" "Yes, Master, all along I have believed that you are the Messiah, the Son of God who comes into the world." After saying this, she went to her sister Mary and whispered in her ear, "The teacher is here and he's asking for you." The moment she heard that, she jumped out and ran to him. Jesus had not yet entered the town, but was still at the place where Martha had met him.
When her sympathizing Jewish friends saw Mary run off, they followed her, thinking she was on her way to the tomb to weep there. Mary came to where Jesus was waiting and fell at his feet, saying, "Master, if you had only been here, my brother would not have died." When Jesus saw her sobbing and the Jews with her sobbing, a deep anger welled up within him. He said, "Where did you put him?" "Master, come and see," they said. Now Jesus wept. The Jews said, "Look how deeply he loved him." Others among them said, "Well, if he loved him so much, why didn't he do something to keep him from dying? After all, he opened the eyes of a blind man." Then Jesus, the anger again welling up within him, arrived at the tomb. It was a simple cave in the hillside with a slab of stone laid against it. Jesus said, "Remove the stone." The sister of the dead man, Martha, said, "Master, by this time there's a stench. He's been dead for 4 days." Jesus looked her in the eye. "Didn't I tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God?" Then to the others, "Go ahead, take away the stone." They removed the stone. Jesus raised his eyes to heaven and prayed, "Father, I'm grateful that you have listened to me. I know you always do listen, but on account of this crowd standing here, I've spoken so that they might believe that you sent me." Then he shouted, "Lazarus, come out." And he came out, a cadaver wrapped from head to toe and with a kerchief on his face. Jesus told them, "Unwrap him, let him loose." There was a turnaround for many of the Jews who were there with Mary. They saw what Jesus did, and they believed in him. There's a lot there to process. So really, I mean, there really is a lot going on there. We've taken this in a big chunk today, and there's so much we could focus on, but I think the Lord is leading us today to focus on these few things as we have this time together. The most obvious thing is this. I grew up singing, "What a Friend We Have in Jesus." And that's not always easy for me. Jesus is not right here physically with us today. We have a different relationship with Jesus that we learn to walk and to trust. But we get these glimpses into what Jesus was like when he was on this earth. And the thing that I want to remind us of this morning, the way Jesus treated his friends is the way he feels about you and I. And that's why I love this picture here, this depiction here of Jesus with Mary and Martha. This was someone who was capable of deeply loving people. I don't know everything about the background, about how he came to know Mary and Martha and Lazarus, but there's more than one account in Scripture about him hanging out with them and about people remarking about how, you know, he deeply loved them and things of this nature. You and I serve a God who wants to enter into a deep friendship with us. That's a remarkable thing. You know, in other religions, the gods were people to be feared. You know, it was Zeus with his lightning bolt and Zeus doing horrible things and even things that we would consider and would be immoral there. This is a God who hangs out with us. This is a God who has a relationship with us. And I really believe that on some level, that same relationship that Jesus had with Mary and Martha and Lazarus is possible with each one of us today. In fact, I want to suggest that through the power of the Holy Spirit that indwells each one of us, the kind of communion and the kind of relationship we can have with Him can be even deeper than this. But we have to have the faith to enter into that. We have to spend time talking with Him. We have to spend quiet time, you know, with Him. We have to spend time in the Word learning about these things, because this is how we learn who Jesus is. Jesus knows us intimately. Do we have the desire to know Him intimately? See, this is a guy I want for a friend.
This is a guy who's there for me when somebody dies. This is a guy who's there for me when I'm going through both good and bad times. And I think this is what, this is significant here, that this is the kind of God that you and I serve. A few verses I just want to grab here with you today. Verse 4 says, this whole situation becomes an occasion to show God's glory. I've heard about that all my life. What do we mean when the Bible talks about God's glory? This example right here shows us what that means. God, you know, Jesus says, I'm coming in here to raise somebody from the dead to show God's glory. See, God's glory is all about His overwhelming love for His entire creation, and especially humanity. You know, God longs to fix all the suffering that our sin has brought into this universe. And this is a glimpse, this is a signpost here today that Jesus does with His friend Lazarus to show what God will ultimately do for this entire universe. He's come to fix it. The ultimate goal of God's glorification is to fix a universe gone bad. That's what He does. I mean, it's very evident. Romans 8, 1 Corinthians 15, Revelation 21, heaven and earth become one. God is going to fix this. In fact, what we have here in Lazarus is basically not really a resurrection. It's a resuscitation. I mean, Lazarus, later on, he dies, right? This is temporary. I mean, he's okay now, but later on, he does what all of us do. You know, he dies. But what happens with Jesus? When Jesus is resurrected, He doesn't die again. And that's a glimpse there. That's God's promise to each one of us that ultimately what God did in Jesus, He's going to do with each one of us. And resurrection means God's going to give us a new body that's imperishable and incorruptible, and it'll never die. And that's an exciting thing because death just does not get the last word here. In fact, in the passage here, what does he say? He says, Lazarus has fallen asleep. Huh? You know, Jesus, do you not know the difference between death and somebody taking a nap? Well, it says in the passage, he gets more explicit there. No, Lazarus has died. You know, Jesus gets that. But from God's perspective, even death is what? It's temporary. It's not final. It doesn't get the final. In fact, it's resurrection that signals the end of death. Resurrection, God gives us new bodies, bodies that are physical, yet imperishable and incorruptible. These new bodies will allow all of us to flourish into everything God ever intended for us and to complete the task that God has already begun, by the way, in you. God says you're a new creation, even right now. But He's called us to be His agents to bring new creation, new life to all of His creation, and He will ultimately do that in the resurrection of our physical bodies. And that's why Jesus can say in this passage in verse 14 what? He says to His disciples, you're about to be given new grounds for believing. Well, why do they need grounds for believing? You understand what the idea of grounds are, right? It's a reason. What reason do I have to believe that death is not permanent? It looks pretty permanent, doesn't it? I remember when we laid my mother in the ground, it looked about as permanent as it can possibly be. They put her in the ground, they shoveled dirt on her, and when we walked away, it's like, well, it's over. Now, God says it's not over. What grounds, what reasons do I have to believe for doing? See, the hardest thing is to believe that death is not final. But for those in a relationship with Jesus, it is not final. Entropy seems to be the law of nature, right? Everything is in decay. Everything seems to be corrupting. Jesus gives us evidence here that by praying to the Father, He can even say, Lazarus, yeah, you're dead. Get up. Really? You know, it would have been really bad if Lazarus hadn't gone up or gotten up, right? That would have proved Jesus to be a fraud, you know, right there. A dead person, a cadaver, all wrapped up like the mummy and all these kinds of things, you know, gets up and walks out of that tomb. That's a good reason to believe that Jesus does know what he's talking about.
This is not a blind faith. This gives us a glimpse of God's power over death.
Now, they believed this to a certain extent. In verse 21, and Mary and Martha both say this at various times, if you had been here, what? My brother wouldn't have died.
They had faith in Jesus' ability to heal. That's pretty significant.
But at least it's one thing to be able to heal sickness. It's another thing to tell a corpse to get up.
That's incredible. That's an incredible claim. That's something that people just don't go around doing, right?
If there's one thing we understand, dead people stay dead.
No. God's got power even over that. And this is a reason why you can believe that. All right?
In fact, Martha says, he will be raised up in the resurrection at the end of time.
See, all the Jews believed, not all the Jews, many of the Jews, some of them did not. Many of the Jews believed in what we call a general resurrection of the dead. That at the end of time, the faithful would be raised.
They had some concept of that and some clue of that in the Old Testament and stuff.
But here's the incredible thing is they thought that none of this would happen until the end of time.
Here's Jesus saying that something that they had never considered.
It's an absolutely remarkable claim here that he could actually do this early.
In fact, he says in verse 25, what?
You don't have to wait until the end. New creation has already begun.
It will ultimately be completed, yes, at the end of time when Jesus comes back.
But I, right now, I'm the resurrection. I'm the life.
This is a remarkable statement.
Jesus expands their vision of the power of the Messiah.
There were glimpses of this in the book of Daniel, in other passages in the Old Testament, but Jesus gives them clarity on this, that the Messiah is not just a chosen one of God, that the Messiah is actually God Himself in the flesh with the power of life and death within Him.
They had underestimated Him.
We don't need to make that mistake.
We have the benefit of 20/20 hindsight here, saying we're dealing with the God-man here.
There are grounds for us believing that Jesus has this power and that Jesus will accomplish that in each one of us.
Now we might say, okay, well, I guess that's all fine and good, and maybe we can look forward to that.
I'm still sad that people I love have died.
I'm still sad about that.
I miss them.
And Jesus says it's okay to do that.
In fact, there's even more so than that. It says in verse 33, knowing that he could raise, Lazarus from the dead, the whole reality of death, Jesus looks at him, and this is something that'll get by us if we don't watch it,
a deep anger.
Because of what's Jesus angry about here?
This is a strong anger.
In fact, this is something Sharon would have appreciated. I know she loved horses, having talked with her, and I was around horses for many years when my wife and I had horses.
Those of you that have had experience with that, have you ever been around the horse and the horse snorts?
He'll just get that,
like that.
What does that mean when the horse does that?
The horse is really upset about something.
There's a strong emotional reaction.
See, the Greek word they're used when Jesus says there's the passage says there's a deep anger that wells up there.
That's snorting.
That Jesus looks at death and says, I don't like that.
I don't like death.
I wasn't responsible for death.
God's not responsible for death.
We brought that on ourselves.
That's one of the consequences of sin.
But that doesn't mean that death gets the final word.
Jesus is upset about that. In fact, he's so upset about it, he's going to do something about it.
Because God, when God's angry, there's going to be a resolution on these things.
But there's another thing as well. And we know about that resolution.
There's a part there, and this was kind of the answer to a trivia thing when I was growing up.
What's the shortest verse in the Bible?
Yep, Jesus wept.
But look at the context of that verse. Jesus is crying about the death of his friend. This is a God who cries about the reality of death. Not only that, he cries with us. And, you know, I've heard all kinds of theories in my life, theological ideas about, you know, why does God allow evil and death and suffering, all these kinds of things. And, you know, I've heard people say, well, maybe only in a world that has a lot of suffering and death, maybe only then a maximum number of people would freely choose to follow, put their trust in God and etc. And that makes for a maximum number of people who come to God. Okay, all that's fine and good. When your loved one is sitting there in that casket, that doesn't help you. That doesn't help you. Sometimes you just need to cry. You got a God who cries with you. Even though God knows the end from the beginning, this is a God who has experienced and feels our pain in that. That's what will get you through those times, not a bunch of theological theories. I know all those theories. They didn't help me when my mom died. So I just call you this morning to this. God's calling us into a bigger picture, a bigger perspective on these things. As we mentioned, death doesn't get the final word. Entropy doesn't win in all of this. In my mom's last few hours on this planet, in her hospital bed, there's only one thing I knew to do, and that was to sing her hymns. That's all I could come up with. I knew that there was a common faith there. There was a common bond. That's the last thing I wanted her to hear was those hymns that she grew up with. Knowing that the meaning and the significance of the words of those hymns were what made her who she was and who makes me what I am. And the reason why we can take comfort in this, and we come back to this each time, 1 Corinthians 15:58. Don't ever think that your work here has been in vain. N.T. Wright explains it like this. Let's see if I can bring this up. This one's on my bucket list, folks. This is the Chartres Cathedral in France. And I'd love to visit this one day. But it's one of many of these stone medieval cathedrals that are just incredibly put together and such artistic achievement behind it. And this is kind of an analogy here, kind of an example here that'll maybe kind of help us understand why the work we do here, why the work Sharon did, why the work that we all do is so important. See, the way they constructed these cathedrals is that there would be an architect that would design it. And many times the masons, the stone masons working on these things, they were illiterate. They couldn't have read the plans even if you would have put them in front of them. So what they would do is they would assign them one block of stone or maybe more than one depending upon their schedule and things like that. And they would give them their instructions and say, carve this stone. They had no idea how the stone was going to be used, how it was going to be put together. Their job was just to be faithful in carving their particular block of stone in that particular shape. Just be obedient and do your part. And so they really weren't building the cathedral. They were what? Building for the cathedral. See, that's what you and I do. We don't build the kingdom. God builds the kingdom. We build for the kingdom. The things that God has called us to do in our lives, we don't know how God is putting all that together. But I can imagine when this cathedral was finally finished, you know that some of these stonemasons would, you know, look up into the sky and the bright light and say, there's my stone. That's how they used it. That's how they put it together. That's how they... And they would admire... I think one day in glory, if I can use that term again, we're going to look at all this and we're going to finally see in the work that God gave us to do, how God put it together, and we're going to point there and say, oh, that's mine. That's how God used it. That's how he put it together. And see, just like the stonemasons were called to be faithful in just carving their block of stone, that's what you and I are called to do today. We don't necessarily see how the work that we're doing as a teacher or a housewife or a business person or a doctor or, you know, whatever it is, a student in school, you know, the things that God's calling you to, you don't necessarily see how God's putting it all together. But one day, we're going to look up at that cathedral and we're going to see it. And it's going to be great. But until then, just be faithful. Just be faithful. So it's all about this relationship, this friend that we have in Jesus. If you haven't come to know him, we're going to sing a song. You can respond and you can be baptized into him and you can begin that relationship. We'll have another time for prayer, as we mentioned later, for other needs and all that. But if you just went anyway, want to respond to this today, we just ask you to do that while we stand and while we sing.